welcome to the Fiorella Files. I'm your hostess, Fiorella Nash, sometimes known by my nom de plume, Fiorella De Maria. I'm a writer of crime fiction and historical novels and an incorrigible bibliophile. It's wonderful to be making a programme on pretty much my favourite subject, books. On my show, I will be introducing you to books, classic and contemporary, that you must read, should enjoy reading, or should not touch with an 11-foot barge pole. This week, it is my once-a-month children's book show involving younger reviewers talking about and sharing their favourite books. And to begin with, I have Nicholas here, who's 10 years old, and is going to talk to you about an author, a much neglected author called Willard Price. Before I give the microphone to Nicholas, a biographical note about Willard Price. He was a Canadian author, I didn't realise that, born in 1887 and from a family of devout, staunch Methodists. He seems to have been quite a child of the outdoors, a lot of canoeing and hiking and fishing, that sort of thing. And this is very reflected in the sort of books he writes. He spent quite a bit of his life in the States, particularly in New York, and like Mr. Dickens, was a bit of a social campaigner. He wrote articles about the terrible child labour conditions and the poverty he came across, the appalling conditions that the poorest members of society were living in. As a journalist, he had the opportunity to travel a great deal. He travelled to 148 countries, in fact, which meant he circled the globe three times in his lifetime, and he died in his late 90s, so he had a good, long, very productive life. His adventure series is very popular and remains popular among younger readers. I'll let Nicholas talk a little bit more about the book. I should say, aspects of the style may seem a little old-fashioned because they were written a long time ago, and certainly the fact that his characters go hunting is a little more controversial today, but the whole point of the way he portrayed hunting was that the animals weren't supposed to be killed, they were supposed to be taken to zoos and studied and things like that. He wasn't exactly a conservationist because the whole concept didn't really exist when he was a young man, but he was clearly very interested in nature and animals and in the world around us. But anyway, that's enough from me. I'm now going to introduce Nicholas, who you've heard before. Hello, Nicholas.
Hello.
There's no point in waving to the microphone. You know they can't see you. Yep. Right. Are you enjoying December? This is a good month, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Now, we're actually recording just before Christmas, so what are you hoping for Christmas, Nicholas?
Oh, I'm just hoping that we can stay together and everything's normal, just like every other Christmas.
Oh, that's lovely, Nicholas. Now, I do find it a bit sad that you're having to even think like that, that the most important Christmas present this year will be that we're all together. But you're absolutely right. We've been apart from our family for a very long time, haven't we? And so we're looking forward to spending a few days with Nunna and Nunnu in their lovely old house. We always spend Christmas with my parents, and they live in a house that's over 300 years old, and it's got oak beams and open fires and things like that. It's very, very cozy, and we always think of Christmas, don't we, when we think of that house? So that's the most special thing. That's lovely that that's the thing you're thinking of, and hopefully there'll be one or two prezzies under the tree as well. Right, so tell me about Willard Price. Which particular Willard Price book?
I'm reading the Amazon Adventure Willard Price.
Okay, so what's Amazon Adventure about?
Basically, two young men and their father go out to the Amazon to do some sort of expedition, and it sort of goes disaster strikes basically while they're there, and they endlessly throughout the book are trying to get home, which is not easy at all, because the Amazon is very dangerous. It's got not just dangerous animals, but you've got very dangerous environments as well.
Right. So it's about the Amazon. Now, you learn about the Amazon a lot, don't you, at school? when mm-hmm. you're learning about the environment and you know, mm-hmm. the dangers to the environment. Did you feel you learnt about the Amazon when you read the book?
Yes, some things I did actually learn that I didn't learn at school.
Mm-hmm. Good sign.
Yes, you know, for example, they don't really talk about the Amazon rivers that much at school. They usually just talk about the forest. However, what the main thing that they do in this is canoeing.
Aha, uh-huh, yes. You can canoe down the Amazon River. That's quite... Mm-hmm. Probably not on your own, though. Okay, and you learnt about the different animals in the Amazon. And do they camp in the Amazon?
Oh, definitely.
Right. And they have all sorts of adventures, do they?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think it's good. Sometimes I struggle to find out what's happening, but I usually get back on track eventually.
Right. Is it a bit more wordy, maybe, than you're used
to?
Yes. Right. Okay. I suppose a lot of older books are a bit like that, aren't they? Would you recommend it?
Yes, definitely.
Right. What sort of age group do you think it's best for?
I think it's best maybe 9 to 12, perhaps, around there.
That sort of age. And is it... I know you don't like me to say this, but is it more of a boy book or a girl book, or do you think girls and boys could both enjoy it?
Well, the three main protagonists are all boys, but it is action packed and all the rest. So I think it's for both genders, really.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. And would you like to read some of his other books? Because there's lots of adventure books.
Yep, there's a whole series of them. I can actually tell you how many. There's South Sea Adventure, Safari Adventure, Arctic Adventure, Elephant Adventure, Lion Adventure, and Gorilla Adventure.
Gorilla Adventure. So which one do you think you'll read next?
Well, they're in a specific order, so probably South Sea Adventure.
Okay, so is Amazon Adventure the first in the series?
I'm pretty sure, yes.
So that's where you get introduced to all the characters and you move on from there. Okay, that's really good to know. Now, were there any bits in the book you felt didn't work especially well?
Well, nearer to the start, there were some small bits that I felt didn't really need... to be there. Some parts at the start when that not really much happens, they just enter the jungle and all the rest.
Right. So do you think it takes a while to get going?
Mm-mm.
But it's worth persevering?
Yeah, once you get to the middle, you can't put it down, really.
Right, so that's good to know. So if you do start reading it and you find it a bit of a slog, then you just need to persevere with it and suddenly it'll just sweep you away. Mm. Right? That sound right? Okay. Which of the characters was your favourite?
My favourite character is probably Hal, just because I feel like the father falls asleep a lot. Like, during the main action bit, like, one bit they're going through a chasm, and they're not sure if there's a pit, a waterfall ahead or anything, and the father's just asleep on the boat, and so he isn't very interesting. Then you got Hal and Roger, they're siblings.
Mm-hmm.
I do prefer Hal. One, he's the oldest, I think, and because of that, I feel like he's a lot more determined, and also... He's a little more serious than his younger brother.
Right. Does it make a difference that you have a father and two sons? Because quite a lot of the time in children's adventure stories, there are no adults, you know, like Harry Potter and all that. Does it change the dynamic?
Well, to be honest, is that Hal and Roger, they are young men, they're not children.
Right, how old are they supposed to be then?
I think Hal's around, you know, 18.
Oh, okay,
I think Roger is about 16 or maybe younger.
Oh, right, okay, so they're young men. Yes, it does make it a little bit different. Mm. But it's unusual, isn't it, to have two generations fighting an adventure
together. However, although they are all on the adventure, the father becomes more and more less of a character and becomes more and more less determined throughout it. Because at the start he's like, yes, let's do this, we can do it, nothing will stand in our way. But then throughout the thing, he just gives up, really. He just doesn't really want to go on the adventure anymore.
Why do you think in children's literature the adults are either absent or not very good at things? Because you get this in a series of unfortunate events, don't you? All the adults are either evil or stupid. Why do you think it is that it's the younger generation who always take the lead in these books?
Well, I think one of the reasons is that in real life, In real life, it's usually known that adults are cleverer than children.
And I wouldn't bet on it, actually, if you carry on.
And I just think that in books, children sort of get their own back.
Right, that's a good way of putting it. They do say, certainly in comedy, maybe not for serious drama, but that role reversal is very important. Like, you know, in Jeeves and Wooster, the way the servant, Jeeves, is cleverer than the master and he controls everything. You get that dynamic, don't you, sometimes, where the person in the weaker position is actually the stronger. So perhaps that comes into it a bit?
That's a good point. Also, the other thing is, I think that's one of the reasons, because as they go on their adventure, they meet people. Like, as they start, there's this sort of plane driver person, and then you have this tribe who's their friends, and then you have this tribe that's not their friends, and you have this other man who's just there and helps them a bit. But usually, every time they meet, the people that help them usually either die, run away, or just don't go on it in the first place.
Right. Now, does a book like this make you want to go and have adventures? Does it make you want to travel?
Well, it depends on how you look at it, really, because most of them do. However, this book here, the Willard Price Amazon Adventure, sort of tells you about the horrors of the Amazon and stuff like that. So sometimes it can drag you away and push you forward at the same time.
Yeah, part of you might think just you can keep the Amazon, someone else can have the adventures, or enjoy central heating and hot baths and things.
Well, yes, sometimes.
You know, there was a meme went around social media some years ago, get lost in nature and you will probably die. But do you get the sense of wanting to conquer nature, you know, climb a mountain or whatever?
Yes, sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Which bit of nature would you like to explore? Would it be the jungle or mountains or the desert or...
I'm not sure. Probably the Himalayas and, you know, the very cold areas.
Uh-huh. Yes. I should say at this point that there is a series that's very, very popular over here featuring an adventurer called Bear Grylls. He's ex-SAS, ex-Special Forces, and he gets dropped in these incredibly hostile locations, doesn't he?
The desert. Well, it's different every episode. Like, in the first episodes, you have the jungle, then you have the mountains, then the desert, and so on.
Yes, and he has a task he has to perform, like, you know, finding somebody who's gone missing, or some place he's got to get to, or some vaccines he's got to get to a remote village or whatever. I think that's what started all this, isn't it? It's all the spirit of adventure. So that's very interesting. So Amazon Adventure by Willard Price, and the whole series is really worth a read. And you think, what was it, 9 to 12?
Yeah.
The best age group to read it. If you do happen to read it, get in touch with me at fiorella@crusadechannel.com. I don't give away my children's details on radio, of course, but if you have any questions for them or any comments, just write to me and I will pass them on. We will return in just a moment and take a stroll through our library's classics section. Next on the Fiorella Files, here on the Crusade Channel, it's not just talk, it's radio. To the children's edition of the Fiorella Files. Next, our library tour leads us to the classics and the must-read because Chesterton would read section, and probably the most famous quest novel written in the 20th century, The Lord of the Rings. With other series and trilogies, we've looked at the whole series, you know, the Narnia stories, for example, the Harry Potter series, but the Lord of the Rings trilogy, it's so weighty, there's so much going on in each of the books that we're going to look at them individually. So we're going to start with the Fellowship of the Ring today. And before I welcome Francesca onto my show to talk about the Fellowship of the Ring, I'm just going to read you a passage from the moment where the Fellowship of the Ring, the Hobbits, Legolas, Aragorn, and the rest are sheltering with the elves at Lothlorien. There were no more sounds. Even the leaves were silent and the very falls seemed to be hushed. Frodo sat and shivered in his wraps. He was thankful that they'd not been caught on the ground, but he felt that the trees offered little protection except concealment. Orcs were as keen as hounds on a scent, it was said, but they could also climb. He drew out Sting. It flashed and glittered like a blue flame, and then slowly faded again and grew dull. In spite of the fading of his sword, the feeling of immediate danger did not leave Frodo. Rather, it grew stronger. He got up and crawled to the opening and peered down. He was almost certain that he could hear stealthy movements on the tree's foot far below. Not elves, for the woodland folk were altogether noiseless in their movements. Then he heard faintly a sound like sniffing, and something seemed to be scrabbling on the bark of the tree trunk. He stared down into the dark, holding his breath. Something was now climbing slowly, and its breath came like a soft hissing through closed teeth. Then coming up close to the stem, Frodo saw two pale eyes. They stopped and gazed upwards, unwinking. Suddenly they turned away and a shadowy figure slipped round the trunk of the tree and vanished. Immediately afterwards, Haldir came climbing swiftly up through the branches. "There was something in this tree that I've never seen before," he said. "It was not an orc. It fled as soon as I touched the tree stem. It seemed to be wary and to have some skill in trees, or I might have thought it was one of you hobbits. I did not shoot, for I dared not arouse any cries. We cannot risk battle. A strong company of orcs has passed. They crossed the Nimrodel, cursed their foul feet in its clean water, and went on down the old road beside the river. They seemed to pick up some scent, and they searched the ground for a while, near the place where you halted. The three of us could not challenge 100, so we went ahead and spoke with feigned voices, leading them on into the wood. Orofin has now gone in haste back to our dwellings to warn our people. None of the orcs will ever return out of Lorien, and there will be many elves hidden on the northern border before another night falls. But you must take the road south as soon as it is fully light." Day came pale from the east. As the light grew, it filtered through the yellow leaves of the Malorn, and it seemed to the hobbits that the early sun of a cool summer's morning was shining. Pale blue sky peeped among the moving branches. Looking through an opening on the south side of the flat, Frodo saw all the valley of the Silverlode lying like a sea of fallow gold, tossing gently in the breeze. The morning was still young and cold when the company set out again, guided now by Haldir and his brother Rumil. "Farewell, sweet Nimrodel," cried Legolas. Frodo looked back and caught a gleam of white foam among the grey tree stems. "Farewell," he said. It seemed to him that he would never hear again a running water so beautiful, forever blending its innumerable notes in an endless, changeful music. Oh, I love Lord of the Rings. I so love Lord of the Rings. And I loved the film. I know there was very mixed opinion about the Peter Jackson films when they first came out, particularly the last one. But I really, really love the whole world Tolkien creates in Lord of the Rings. Middle Earth, with its own languages, with its own mythology. It's just an extraordinary adventure. When I read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, I was already an adult when I read it. I don't know, I didn't discover Lord of the Rings until I was a student. And when I read the books, I was commuting to London every day. It was an hour's journey, train journey from Cambridge to London at the crack of dawn. It was a horrible journey in a crowded train. And I'd read Lord of the Rings. And when I got to the end of The Return of the King, I felt homesick for Middle Earth. It had given me this wonderful adventure through many, many very boring train journeys, and I just found it so hard to close the book. But anyway, enough about my views on Lord of the Rings. Here is Francesca. Hello, Francesca.
Hello.
Now, I was asking Nicholas a minute ago about what he wants for Christmas. I should just say we are recording this just before Christmas. What would you like for Christmas?
Well...
What are you hoping for?
I don't know, just a good book.
A good book? Oh, a girl after my own heart. Thank you so much.
I like reading.
You love reading. I know you love reading. It's great to have at least a few bookworms in the family.
A few.
Yeah. What are you reading at the moment?
So I'm reading the second of the trilogy.
Oh, yes, the
Lord of the Rings.
Okay, but we're going to talk about the Fellowship of the Ring. Now, you first came across Lord of the Rings through the films,
yes,
didn't you? You watched them first. So, first of all, what did you make of the films? Did you enjoy them?
I actually really enjoyed them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got swept along, did you?
Yes.
They're very beautiful, aren't they, the way they recreate the world. Who was your favourite character in the films?
Aragorn.
We all love Aragorn, right?
Yes.
Aragorn, not Legolas.
I don't know, there's something about Aragorn. It's just...
You go for rugged and manly rather than sort of wimpy elf. Yes, with long hair.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, there was a bit of a debate went on when the films came out. You know, half the girls liked Aragorn, half the girls liked Legolas. But yes, I'm with you on Aragorn.
Yes.
Okay, so then you decided to read the books and you read The Fellowship of the Ring. Right, tell us, in a nutshell, what is The Fellowship of the Ring about?
Well, so... Wow, where do I start?
Yes, it's not really a book you can do in a nutshell, is it? But just
not really.
Basic themes.
But, so there's a ring.
Mm-hmm.
And, so it was one ring to rule all of the rings. So different rings were given out to the different people.
Yes, like humans and elves.
Yeah, etc.
Dwarves and that, yeah.
And then, but there was one powerful ring to rule all of them. And, basically, a group of boys.
Yes.
Just a group of boys.
You don't like the fact that there are no girls in the Fellowship?
Well, there are, like, some, but they're, like...
They're not in the Fellowship, are
no,
they?
No, they're not in the Fellowship.
Okay.
Like, the actual Fellowship. So a group of boys basically have to try and journey to... Across the three books, they journey to destroy the ring.
Yeah, but in Mordor.
The ring kind of... makes the person addicted to it, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Sort of.
You see what happened to Gollum, and then you can see it almost happening to Frodo, can't you?
Yes.
The battle going. What do you think the ring symbolises?
Sort of like temptation and like the devil and trying to tempt you and something so powerful.
Mm-hmm. And Frodo, of course, is very pure.
Very pure.
For instance, so he can carry it. Without it having too much of an effect on him, and yet it still does.
It still
doesn't
does
it?
A bit. So,
whereas Boromir is pretty much doomed to failure, quite because he's human, and
he's human, and humans are,
and men are weak.
Weak,
and, yeah, and all of that. What's your favourite moment in the book?
Oh, I do like it when they sort of all come together.
Mm.
I sort of like it when they build the.
Build the Fellowship.
Build the Fellowship.
Yeah.
There's just something nice about that.
There are lots of different locations, aren't there, in the first book. You've got the Shire.
Oh, I like the Shire.
The Shire
There's
is
something nice about this sort of cosy...
Don't you think... I mean, I grew up in leafy Wiltshire, and I was convinced the Shire was supposed to be Wiltshire, because it is just like that,
it
little
is
rivers.
Like
and
that, actually,
yeah.
Yes.
I think it's probably Oxfordshire he was thinking of, but...
Yes.
Do you get that feeling of, you
yes,
know...
Yes, yes.
And the sort of the country folk who were...
Yeah.
Well, they're not sentimentally described, are they?
No,
they've got
they're nice.
Yeah,
you can kind of imagine them very well.
Mm. It all feels just a little bit familiar.
Yeah.
Except they're not quite that short in Warminster. So, but of all the locations, you've got the Shire, you've got Lothlorien, Rivendell, Mordor. Well, you don't get to Mordor in the first
not
book,
in
of
the
course.
First one.
Bree. Was the Shire your favourite
yes.
location?
Yeah.
I rather like Lothlorien myself.
That's nice.
But it is very alien, isn't it? It's obviously not where the hobbits belong. Okay. In the book, did you have a different favourite character?
No.
You still really still liked Aragorn.
I still liked.
Okay. Were you thinking of Viggo Mortensen?
Yes, because I sort of had already watched the film, so I already had that in my mind of what...
Right. This is your idea of an alpha male, is it? Life is going to hold so many disappointments for you, darling. Never mind. Was there anything you found a struggle about the book you didn't think worked?
Well, you sort of started me off because you said the beginning bit wasn't...
Yes, I have to make a little confession to here for Tolkien aficionados. I am really very sorry about this, but when I read The Fellowship of the Ring, I found the opening, once they'd left the Shire, phenomenally tedious until they got to the Prancing Pony. I just found that whole section of the book almost unnavigable. So I did recommend you skipped a little bit Tom Bombadil and all that. I never got what the point of Tom Bombadil is at all. Yes. Did you attempt to read those bits, or did you just take my advice?
I mean, I tried, but it was a bit tedious. Yeah. But the rest of the book was great. It was brilliant, but it was just that bit at the beginning, I just think.
Yeah, it is very definitely in the category of one of those books that takes quite a while to get going.
Yes.
But when it does, you just can't put it down. Yes. And the same goes for... And in fact, the second and third books, you don't have that because you hit the ground running with each of them because you're already into the story. I think it's the first book of the trilogy.
Yes.
It's just a little bit difficult to get going. And of course, it was written in stages, wasn't it, for Tolkien's son?
Yeah.
So I suppose his son had plenty of time to read, you know, wherever it was he was posted. Did it make you want to read the other books?
Yes, it did.
Definitely. And are you enjoying... Don't tell us too much about the second book. Are you enjoying it so far?
Yes, it's good.
Yeah, and did you find you got going with it more easily?
Yeah, it was a lot easier. It sort of started quite quickly, if you know what I mean. It didn't take forever to get...
Yeah. I mean, I loved all three books. I think in terms of the story, The Fellowship of the Ring was my favourite.
Yeah.
But are you the sort of person who might be persuaded to read The Silmarillion and all the appendices? Can you see yourself getting really obsessed with Middle-earth?
I'm not sure if I get that obsessed with Middle-earth, though there is something nice that kind of feels like home, if you know what I mean. There's a sort of...
Well, I gather that when Tolkien wrote the books, his idea was to give England a kind of mythology, because a lot of countries have a mythology. Like, you know, in Denmark you've got the legend of Thor and all the Viking mythology that went before it. But you don't have anything quite the same in England. And Middle-earth, in some ways, was Tolkien writing a mythology. Would you believe it? Our little dog is whimpering at the sight of himself in the mirror. He thinks he has a rival in this very room. So just ignore the whimpering noises and just pretend you're not hearing him barking if he barks. Yes. So it was in a way sort of... creating a mythology. Now, do you think you can do that? Just decide to write a mythology?
I mean, if you're as talented as Tolkien, I think you could.
Yeah. Definitely. He got completely obsessed. I mean, you know, he didn't just invent a language, he actually wrote poetry in it and things like that. I mean,
the fact you can actually learn...
Yeah, you can learn Elvish.
You can learn the languages.
It is extraordinary, isn't it, that even, say, Duolingo, you can learn fictional languages.
Yes.
We were a bit mortified to discover that on Duolingo, you can learn Klingon, but you can't learn Maltese. Would you believe that? You can learn a language that was invented for Star Trek, but you can't learn the Maltese language.
Yes, absolutely.
Which was a bit annoying, and I bet you anything there are probably more people who speak Elvish than speak Maltese, but there you go. But it's interesting, is I always wonder how mad you had to be to create a world quite that detailed and get so lost in it.
Yes.
But it's a good world to get lost in, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you recommend it?
Definitely.
Definitely. Everyone should read Tolkien.
Yes, I think.
Yeah. Okay.
At least read the first book, because I know that you will get drawn into Middle-earth. You will want to read on.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I have to admit, one of the reasons it took me so long to read the Lord of the Rings trilogy is that it had a bit of a reputation for being nerd lit when I was a teenager, because, you know, it was the sort of book that, you know, beardy men, you know, with very thick glasses, who were sort of obsessed with old technology and things, would have, you know, a copy of The Fellowship of the Ring under one arm. You know, it had that kind of feel to it. Though I will confess something on radio. Your auntie was so obsessed with the Lord of the Rings trilogy when the films came out that her friends bought her the One Ring as a present with a little chain to put around her neck. And it had a little box it came in which had a light to make it look as if it was glowing. Don't tell her I told you that. Anyway, thank you so much, Francesca. That's really interesting. I am going to call you all back in a minute to discuss our final book, our series, in fact, of the week. Well, finally, a series of books that my children did not get on quite so well with, but it is very, very popular and has been adapted all over the place, including as a video game, and that is Francesca Simon's Horrid Henry series, written by Francesca Simon but illustrated by Tony Ross. Both Francesca Simon and Tony Ross are very well known in Britain. Tony Ross was the creator of the Little Princess books, which, by an interesting coincidence, my children also didn't get on desperately well with. But we're going to talk about Horrid Henry. Very quick note about Francesca Simon. She's an American author living in London. And Horrid Henry is what she's most famous for, but she has written other books as well. She is a children's writer. She has won all sorts of awards, the British Book Award. I think she was the first American to win this award, so there you go. But I will let the children tell you what they think about Horrid Henry. Right. I now have three of the children gathered. It's going to get a bit gigglesome, and I'm sorry, by the way, if there's any thudding noises from me touching the microphone. It's quite difficult to keep the microphone still when you have a huge audience. So welcome back, Francesca.
Hello.
Welcome back, Nicholas.
Hello.
And hello, Natalia.
Hello.
Right, I've asked the others this, so I'll ask you. What are you hoping for Christmas?
A Harry Potter jumper.
A Harry Potter jumper?
Yes.
Right, you want a Gryffindor jumper, do you?
Yes.
Right. You are a Gryffindor at heart, are you?
Yes.
Okay. All right, there's nothing wrong with that. All right. Okay, so we're going to talk about Horrid Henry. Now, could you all please start by telling us what Horrid Henry is about?
Well, basically, Horrid Henry is about this boy.
Called Henry?
Yes.
Right.
Called Henry.
Yeah. You don't say.
That's obvious.
Yes.
And basically, in each book, different things happen. Like, the one I read was a Christmas special, and as you can guess, you got stuff like a catastrophic Christmas play led by catastrophic Chris, but by, you know, something like Horrid Henry trying to capture Santa and steal his
Does he lay a trap for Santa? Does he lay a trap?
Yes, he lays a trap.
What does he do to...
Basically, what actually happens is in that story, he thinks that what if Santa knew that there was a trap there and put the presents down on the bottom downstairs instead of up in his room like he'd usually do. So he goes downstairs and he starts to decorate the tree.
He starts taking the chocolates off the tree.
Then he starts to, you know, decorate it. Then it tips over.
And the parents come running down because they think there's like an intruder or something.
And he runs upstairs, he falls into his own trap, and then he looks in the stocking. It's all like stuffed and bungling.
Right, okay. So he gets his comeuppance. Right, so there's Horrid Henry, okay. Has he got a family?
Yes. Perfect Peter.
He's really annoying.
Perfect Peter, who is very annoying.
Is it his brother? Yeah, older brother? Younger brother?
Younger brother. Then his parents, who are always grumpy.
And then there are the cousins who you're introduced in, and they're in the Christmas special.
Because, you know, they arrive there. Mm-hmm. But you don't really get to know much about them. Those four characters, the parents, his younger brother, and Horrid Henry himself, are the main characters.
Right, okay. Yes, Natalia.
The one I read was called Horrid Henry's Birthday Party.
And what happens in that?
Okay, so basically he's setting up for his birthday party and he writes a list of everything he wants for his birthday. And it's like, stuff I want, something, something, something. And then when it's his birthday, everybody brings him like vegetables and stuff.
Right.
But then his friend, I can't really remember his name, gives him like a Water Gun 2000 or something, and that's one of the things he really wanted. And then like his parents were like, no, 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 and like
I probably say then, something like that. Yes, no.
And then like he goes upstairs, but the parents get really angry for something, mm-hmm. and then he hears it, and then he gets his Water Gun 2000 because he brings it up into the room and then he sprays it into the entire room and then his parents get really angry.
Okay.
Because he gets soaking wet.
So basically, so he's basically always in trouble. Right. Okay, I mean, it sounds quite funny to me.
There are some really funny moments, I agree with that. But
overall, I don't really like it.
Okay.
I wouldn't really recommend it to older children.
Okay.
I mean, I would say it's really funny. There are some really funny moments, as I said before. But it does kind of make, because it's from his perspective,
mm-hmm.
makes seeming like really nice and being a good child and, you know, reading and doing, you know,
mm-hmm.
playing instruments and doing something creative is bad.
Right.
Which is kind of annoying because it makes it sound like it's a bad thing to be mm-hmm. a good child, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And so it's irritating.
It's a bit irritating.
Okay, what about you, Natalia? What do you think of it?
I can't stand it.
Oh, you can't stand it? Okay.
Whoa.
Why can't you stand it?
Because there are just some moments I think are just a bit too silly.
Right. So it was just a bit too much, was it? Okay. What did you feel about the relationship between the two brothers? Because that's come up
like,
in conversation.
Well, some of the time they get along, but most of the time they hate each other.
Almost every single time they hate each other.
It kind of cliches siblings, if you know what I mean. Because there's always this idea that siblings are always... I mean, we do get argued sometimes, but it does give the idea that they're always arguing all the time and it's a bit annoying.
Mm. Does it annoy you?
Yes.
Right, so how do you think it should have been? How do you think they should have shown the two boys?
I mean, I think they should have shown them, like, rather than being sort of horrible, being mischievous is, like, okay, mm-hmm. I think.
But you felt it crossed a line, didn't it?
It crossed a line.
Isn't it a bit of a cliche of children's stories anyway that brothers and sisters always hate each other?
Yes, because, I mean, We don't always hate each other.
you get on pretty well most of the time,
don't
you?
Yeah, you get on pretty well most of the time, so.
Yes.
Why in books are siblings always rivals?
Yes, and they never work as a team, do they? And you are very much a team, aren't
you?
Yes.
Well, sometimes.
Sometimes?
Well, yes.
I have seen some lovely moments, like when one of you's ill and the rest of you look after them and things.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
But snuggly time.
Mm-hmm. The point is that I wouldn't mind Horrid Henry if it was from somebody else's perspective, like maybe a friend, for example, or maybe his younger brother, because I think mm-hmm. that would make it seem a little more feel a little more
objective.
Yeah, that's the word.
But if it was from somebody else's perspective, then it wouldn't really be called Horrid Henry.
I suppose it might be if it was third person narrative.
Yeah.
You know, but perhaps is it the fact that it's from his point of view is what makes it an intimate portrait?
Yes. Exactly. So you get to see sort of what he thinks, and often what some little children think.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think it is a fair representation of what children are like?
No.
Right, okay, that's
it
pretty...
It kind of divides children into, like, horrible, either goody-two-shoes kind of thing, and then just bossy and annoying. It kind of... There's not really any...
Yeah, there's no nuance.
Yes, because either they're, like, Horrid Henry and they're just really horrible all the time, or they're, like, Perfect Peter, who is very... much favourite child kind of thing. Or they're like the people at his school. who were always bossing him around and stuff.
How are adults portrayed?
I can't really think of one adult, because to be on in Horrid Henry that helps, because to be honest, there are only three really important adults, mm-hmm. apart from maybe like a shopkeeper or something. You have mm-hmm. the parents, and then you have his teacher, who, mm-hmm. to be honest, all really do not like Henry.
He doesn't give them a lot of reason to like him.
That is a
does
point.
He?
Yeah, and he's always grouching and griping about what they do. Like in a Christmas play, he gets a really puny role and starts griping in front of the teacher about it.
Right.
That gets him into lots of trouble.
Well, nobody likes a whinger, do they?
Really? No, I mean, they have a point for being annoyed.
Yeah. I have to say, from the parents' point of view, I think his parents are atrocious parents. I mean, I can't imagine raising children like that. Like with the birthday party where he caused so much chaos the previous year that he was banned from the venue. I think if it had been me, I would have just said, "You're not having a party this year, sweetheart." You know, given that he practically trashed the place.
Yeah.
I don't know. But then maybe I'm just being self-righteous, because, of course, I know my little darlings would never do anything like that, would you?
No, we wouldn't.
Probably not. Okay, right. Well... Well, that's lovely. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Before Natalia explodes with giggles. Sorry, I just rather provoke that. I better let you all go. Do say a happy Christmas to listeners.
Merry Christmas.
Happy Christmas!
That was a bit loud.
Well, that was subtle. Bye. Off you go. Go Bye. Away. That's it. Bye. Right. Bye.
Bye.
Beep, beep. Thank you. Yes. Off you go. Go. Beep. Thank you. Thank you. Off you go. Bye. Close the door. That's it. Yes. And peace descends. Right. A small part of me is kind of glad they don't like Horrid Henry, because I wouldn't want them to think of a nasty, disobedient little boy as some kind of a role model. Anyway, it has been my absolute pleasure, as always, to take you on a little journey through my children's crazy and eclectic library. I hope you have had a truly wonderful Christmas and continue to enjoy Christmastide right until the very end. And remember, in the words of either George Bernard Shaw or Oscar Wilde, the jury is out. Youth is the most beautiful thing in this world, and what a pity it has to be wasted on children. Goodbye and God bless.